people.
I told you, people. I warned you, people, but nobody ever listens to me. Why should you listen? I warned you. I told you. I told you, folks in Wisconsin, to be careful up there. But no, no. Why listen to Brad? Hey, hey, good evening, America. Truth Seekers, there we go. Welcome, Truth Seekers. This is your Mike Malloy Show. I know, it doesn't sound like Mike. It's me, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, broadcasting live all this week as Mike is on a much-needed vacation. I think he went down to Florida. I'm pretty sure he's going down there to purge some voters. Because, you know, that's what Malloy does. Anyway, yeah, we'll probably talk about that at some point this week. He's on vacation. You got me broadcasting from beautiful downtown Burbank as the sun sets. It's not even setting. It's usually setting this day. We got two more hours of sunset, right? You people on the East Coast, the sun may be setting, though. And so you've come to the right place. Snuggle up to your radio. We've got an exciting evening for you. You can also join us at the bradblog.com chat room this week, which is turned on, ready to rock and roll. Desi is in there. Margot Paez is in there. She's our super duper associate producer. Desi is, of course, our producer. And I think some of the regulars are beginning to file in. They'd love to see you there. Bradblog.com. Go check out the chat room, play along at home. You may also wish to tweet me throughout tonight, and you can do so at The Brad Blog. That's my name on the Twitters, just The Brad Blog. Okay, there's that piece of business. What else? Oh, our phone number tonight will be 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. That's what it's going to be all week long. And don't call it now, because I got stuff to say. But write it down, because you're going to want to get in on this show tonight. 877-520-1150 will be our phone number. Coming up tonight on the show, John Washburn, a Republican out of Wisconsin, a Republican supporter of Scott Walker's, will be joining us. And he also happens to be an election integrity expert. You guys may have heard him on this show before. I've had him on this broadcast while sitting in for Mike Malloy. I've had him on my own weekly show on KPFK out here in Los Angeles, the local Pacifica affiliate. I'll not give anything away yet. I'll just hang on to your hats. He'll be joining us here this hour. Also, a little bit later in the show, Michael Leahy will be joining us, the director of public policy for the California Nurses Association, because, well, yes, unions are under fire like never before. And they have taken this apparent victory. Actually, opponents of unions have taken this apparent victory up there in Wisconsin to say, see, America hates unions. We want to destroy them all. We want nobody to have pensions. We want people to work until they die, or if they want to slack off and retire early, then they can go out in the street and beg for food. What do they need a pension for? What do they need retirement for? Those lazy, lazy public workers. Those lazy 9/11 firemen. Those policemen, those school teachers, oh, those nurses just living large with their Cadillac healthcare plans and their fat cat pensions. Who needs them? They don't deserve it. Firefighters putting their life on the line for you for 9/11, the hell with them. Just lazy government workers. Get rid of them. So we're going to talk about some of that with Michael Leahy of the California Nurses Association, because the fact is, unions really are under fire like I have never seen before. I was on TV on RT last week talking about the Wisconsin race, and some of the replies, some of the responses, some of the comments over at YouTube when they posted my appearance were pretty remarkable. So we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show, but let me get straight to Wisconsin here. Because I have not been on this program since what happened last week in Wisconsin happened. I said I warned you. I warned you before the election. For months, I warned you about what was going on out there. I warned you about those voting machines. Now stay with me, because I'm not saying Scott Walker lost this race. I'm also not saying Scott Walker won this race. And here is why. Because the ballots that they use in Wisconsin, thankfully, most of the state votes on verifiable paper ballots, hand-marked by the voters. Problem is, they don't bother to, you know, actually verify them. They run them through the electronic scanners up there. Now, those scanners are either right or they are wrong when they turn out results. Recently, in Palm Beach County, Florida, just this past March, we had three different elections that the Sequoia optical scan voting machines had the results completely wrong, naming several of the losing candidates to be the winners. Now, the only reason we found out that the losing candidates were named to be the winners by the Sequoia optical scan voting system was because in Florida now, I don't know how this got through the legislature, but in Florida now, they actually bother to do a post-election spot check of 2% of the ballots, of the paper ballots, to make sure, sort of, that the computer got it right. And what do you know, down there in Palm Beach County, Florida, they found that three different elections were completely wrong. So they did a hand count. They hand counted 100% of the paper ballots, and they found out that two of the people who were named as the winners were actually the winners of the race. Those machines made by the Sequoia Voting Systems Company are the very same machines that are used up in Waukesha, Wisconsin. You remember Waukesha, where our old friend Kathy Nicholas up there, the right-wing county clerk, found 14,000 ballots that hadn't been reported in last year's Supreme Court race up in Wisconsin that flipped the results of the race. Okay, well, she uses the same machines that down there in Florida had named three different losers to be the winners, three different winners to be the losers. And they found out because they hand-counted the ballots. That's the Sequoia voting machines that they use in Wisconsin. Also in Wisconsin, they use machines made by ES&S. Specifically, the ES&S, DS200 machines. Yes, those excellent brand-new machines made by ES&S, just put onto the market a few years ago. They were put on the market in time for New York City to use them in 2010. New York was the last state in the union to move from mechanical lever voting systems over to electronic voting systems under the Federal Help America Vote Act. They did that in 2010 for the big Republican wave election. Well, 2 years later, guess what we found out about those DS200s in New York City? The company has now confirmed, ES&S is the company, they have now confirmed that thousands of votes were completely lost on those machines, those DS200s in New York City. How did we find that out? Well, the New York Daily News did a public records request of the ballots after strange numbers were coming up in some precincts up in the South Bronx. And it turns out that in one precinct in the South Bronx, the voting machines got the vote. What was this? 70% of the votes were in error during the primary election in 2010 in the South Bronx. In the general election, the machines did better. They were only 54% wrong. We found that out 2 years later when the New York Daily News was finally able to actually look at the paper ballots and actually count them and find out that the machine had been throwing out thousands of votes, thousands of legitimate votes. And of course, because they didn't check the paper ballots afterwards, they didn't know. I could tell you about Oakland County, Michigan, where in 2008, they were lucky because in the pre-election testing up there on their ES&S machines, a different model, the Model M100, also used up in Wisconsin, they found that the very same machines would not count the ballots the same way twice. The same machine, you got that? The same machines would not count the same ballots the same way twice. They discovered that before the election. And they were able to try to do something about it. The company said, oh, well, that's because they had gotten dirty. You just need to clean the optical scanner there a little bit. Uh-huh. And how about, of course, famously down in Leon County, Florida in 2005 when the Diebold optical scan machines were hacked by a hacker? You might have seen it in HBO's Hacking Democracy that completely flipped the results of a mock election down there. All of those machines are used in Wisconsin where they do not check a single ballot after the election to make sure that it's been recorded accurately as per the voter's intent. So did Scott Walker win last Tuesday by 300,000 votes or so? I don't know. You don't know. Election officials don't know because nobody bothered to check the ballots. And by the way, did the Democrat win, the one who was announced the winner or who has actually claimed victory in the 21st State Senate District, the one who, if he is certified as the winner, will flip the control of the State Senate to the Democrats? Did he win? The machine said just 800 votes separate him from the incumbent Republican. He's claimed victory. I think the Republican ought to stand up and ask for a hand count in that race in Wisconsin. Good luck getting that, by the way. You got to go to court to ask for a hand count. Even if you have a recount, you got to go to court to have them hand counted. Otherwise, they'll just use the same machines that they used in the initial results. So are they correct? I don't know. You don't know. Scott Walker doesn't know. John Lehman, the Democrat who declared victory in the 21st Senate District in Wisconsin, he doesn't know. Nobody knows. Maybe the people who voted know. Maybe the people who took the exit polls knew. No, they didn't know either because those results were 50-50 according to all of the network broadcasting. That night. We're going to talk about that when we come back. Brad, in for Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Must be some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief.
Yes, we're giving you that relief right here on the Watchtower with Brad Friedman sitting in for Mike Malloy. Brad of bradblog.com. We're talking Wisconsin and what the hell happened there. And, oh, yeah, there's a lot of other stuff going on this week. I promise we'll be moving on to that in due time. But since nobody else is talking about this, nobody else is asking about the results in Wisconsin, everybody else is presuming that all of the computers work perfectly, the computers that failed time and time again in election after election, and yet Wisconsin, in all its brilliance, does not bother to check a single ballot after it is tallied by the computer, tallied either correctly or incorrectly. And I just ran through in the previous segment a bunch of recent failures with paper ballot op scan machines. Make no mistake, I'm not even talking about touchscreen machines. Those are 100% unverifiable. There ain't no way anybody can ever know if those are recorded correctly as per the voter's intent. I'm talking about the paper ballots, and no, they're not verified afterwards to find out if the computer's got it right. Why does all of this matter? Well, we're going to talk, by the way, about that in a moment with John Washburn, a Republican supporter of Scott Walker's, who may share my concerns about the results nonetheless. Okay, here's the other reason why you should be concerned. On election night, you may remember, just 2 minutes after the polls closed up there in Wisconsin at 8:02 p.m. Central Time, Chuck Todd took to Twitter to say, quote, "We are officially saying Wisconsin is too close to call. Precinct exit data indicates total coin flip." That's what everybody was saying. That's what CNN was saying, MSNBC, Fox News. It was too close to call. The exit polls, those polls of people coming out of the precincts who have just voted, telling pollsters how they voted, The results across the state were showing that it was 50-50, too close to call. They were going to have to wait for results. And yet, by 46 minutes after the hour, actually 51 minutes after the hour, NBC calls it for Walker. Chuck Todd says, our models indicate that once all the votes are counted, Walker's final margin will be somewhere in the 4 to 6 point range because absentees mattered. Really? Well, that was unclear at the time. Do we have time to play this before I go to the break, Tony? Yeah, I can play this. Okay, this is what happened, huh? We're going to play it close? You know what? We'll play it when we come back before I go to John Washburn. Because all of the networks were saying all night this is going to, oh, this is going to be an all-nighter. Get ready. Get your popcorn. We're going to be here all night. It's going to be late night. We may be until tomorrow morning before we know who actually won the Wisconsin recall race. The race that has been 16 months in the making between Scott Walker and Tom Barrett. We don't know. We can't know. Because when we polled people all across the state and all of the news organizations, they worked together with these exit pollsters to find out how people voted, how people just voted just now when they walked out of the booth. They don't have to try to remember how they voted. They don't have to guess in advance the way they do with pre-election polls where, you know, who knows if they're actually going to vote or not at all. These are people who walked just right out of the booth. And those people, the information, the data that they gave to the pollsters was so close, was so tight that everyone, including Rachel Maddow, over on MSNBC, all the folks on CNN, all said, it's going to be a long night. It's going to be too close to call. And then 45 minutes later or so, they called it. And they called it in a big way for Scott Walker. Based on results, what results? Exit results based on the computer results that I've already told you are flawed time and again? I don't know. We'll play a clip of Rachel talking about what happened that night before it goes down the memory hole. And we'll speak with John Washburn, a Walker supporter, about all of this when we come back. Brad, in from Mike Malloy. Stay right there. This is the Mike Malloy Show, coming to you live from the West Coast. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, cheering you people up in Wisconsin, on Wisconsin. And we are talking about Wisconsin today, and never fear, you people in Wisconsin, continue the fight. We got your back. You need to keep fighting. I'm going to tell you how, and I'm going to tell you how across the entire country to continue this fight. This is your democracy, and you're losing it. Not to losing elections, you're losing your democracy. You're losing it to these machines that fail, to these exit polls that are kept only, you know, this was amazing last week. And we're going to get to John Washburn. John, hang on the line. When they came out at 8:02 seconds after Wisconsin time, after the polls closed, and they told everybody, "Oh, it's going to be a long night. We have been looking at exit polls all day long. We have been looking at the data." And this race between Scott Walker and Tom Barrett, I'm telling you, is neck and neck, and people are still in line. They're, and if you're in line before 8 o'clock, you still get to vote. They're still in line. They're running out of ballots all over Milwaukee. They're running out of registration forms because in Wisconsin, you can register and vote on the same day. There's such a huge turnout. Oh, boy, it looks like it's going to be a squeaker. And then a few minutes later, never mind. Scott Walker wins. Next story. What happened? What happened there? What happened to that exit data that had everybody 50-50, that had it so tight the networks could not make their call? Well, you and I are mere mortals. We don't get to see the exit data. That is proprietary secret information that only experts like, Matt Drudge gets to see. And Rachel Maddow and Wolf Blitzer and the people at CNN and MSNBC and Fox News who get to look at that exit data. You don't get to look at it. The only data you get to see from the exit polls has been adjusted. And I'm not kidding. They adjust the data to fit with the results that come off of the voting machines. So nobody questions whether the results are right. They question, well, why was our exit data so wrong? Well, let's just adjust it. And then it'll be right. We'll make it all right. We'll just adjust it based on the election results. And I've talked to many pollsters over the years. I've talked to exit pollsters. They think that's the gold standard. Whatever comes off the computers, that's the gold standard. That's how people actually voted. So if our exit data was wrong, well, we'll adjust it to that. Will they show us the raw data? Will they show us the raw data where, you know, in one precinct where it was 80-20 for Tom Barrett over Scott Walker, and yet the results when they came off the machines showed that it was 50-50 or something like that? No, they do not show that to us because we're not allowed to see that. Neither are we allowed to see how those ballots are counted, those paper ballots are counted inside the proprietary, privately owned voting systems, voting machines that count those paper ballots. We are simply expected to accept the results. Scott Walker defeated Tom Barrett in a landslide. Never mind the exit polls. John Lehman, the Democrat, defeated Senator Van Wangard in the 21st District, the state Senate, flipping the control of the Senate from the Republicans to the Democrats. You see, this is not a partisan thing. This is a democracy thing. This is how close it was. And before this goes down the memory hole, and we're going to get to John. Hang in there, John Washburn. He's in Wisconsin. He's a Scott Walker supporter. He'll tell me whether I'm crazy here or not. But before this goes down the memory hole, I want you all to remember what happened when those polls closed on last Tuesday night. Here's Rachel Maddow talking to John Holloman, I think is his name. One of the guys. It doesn't matter. Here's what she had to say after the polls closed last Tuesday night.
So the polling ahead of this election showed Scott Walker ahead. Tom Barrett never led in any polls leading into this. But especially in the exit polling today, it looked like it was going to be very, very close. In the end, it was not very close. Do we know yet what happened?
I've been trying to figure that out myself because we were expecting a long night, maybe not even a call tonight, not until the morning. And you know, you kept watching the returns come in and the pile got bigger and bigger, and Walker was up double digits. He was up high double digits for a while. Now the latest numbers that I've seen show about 10 points, maybe a little bit less than 10 points, which is larger than his margin in 2010. So I'm quite surprised and don't know exactly what was off in the measurement, whether there was a participation problem with people supporting Walker not responding to the exit pollsters. That's always a possibility, but I haven't heard that explained yet.
In terms of the other sort of unexplained thing connected to the exit polls here, the other sort of thing that we're still trying to figure out, whether it's a measuring thing or whether it is just a confounding result, are these very positive numbers for President Obama turning up in the exit polls. Even as the state decides to keep Scott Walker, in this electorate, the preference for Obama over Romney was an 11-point split. The president also getting much better numbers than Romney on the economy. What could explain a pro-Walker, pro-Obama split decision like that?
Yes, what could explain that? And John Holloman, or whatever his name is, he goes on to speculate. And that's all they've got. They've got speculation here. The data they have, they won't show it to us. The speculation we have to hear for hours on end. What went wrong? What could have possibly... How could it be that all of these Obama supporters supported Scott Walker? Really? Did they really? And then I've heard people say, oh, well, actually, I'll talk to John Washburn about this. So John Washburn is an election integrity advocate with Fair Elections Wisconsin and Wisconsin Citizens for Election Protection. He's an award-winning open records advocate, 2008 James Madison Award from the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas. And he calls himself a Ron Paul Republican. Oh, John Washburn, welcome, sir, to the Mike Malloy Show.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
I should say welcome back. Okay, now, stop me if I get too personal here, John Washburn, but who did you vote for in last Tuesday's recall election in Wisconsin?
I voted for Scott Walker.
Now, why did you vote in a few seconds? Why did you vote for Scott Walker over Tom Barrett?
While I didn't vote for Scott Walker in the November election, I voted for Virgil.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think this was a proper thing for recall. I'll be honest with you.
Because he didn't break any laws and that sort of thing?
Basically, yes, and I don't think it was corruption. And quite frankly, before the election, everyone who didn't like Scott Walker said, well, if you want him to do to the state what he did to Milwaukee County, vote for him. And people who supported him said, if you want him to do for the state what he did for the county, Milwaukee County.
And what he did for Milwaukee County when he was the executive there, aside from potentially breaking the law, we'll find out about that soon.
We'll find out
other than that, he severely curbed the public unions.
He tried very, very, very hard, but he was blocked at almost every turn by the county board.
Right.
That was the legislative equivalent at the county level.
All right.
But,
so
not for lack of trying. Let's put it that way.
Okay. So you may or may not have agreed with him. And by the way, I've heard other people say the same thing as, I would have voted against it, but he didn't break any laws. It's not a proper thing to have a recall over. Funny thing is, John Washburn, I didn't hear any Republicans say that when they were recalling Gray Davis as governor out here in California. He broke no laws.
See, now I would not have voted for Schwarzenegger in that case. I probably would have voted for Davis.
So all right,
not a proper subject for recall.
Fair enough. But this is not. I don't want to talk to you about politics here. That's not the reason I had you on. I just wanted to establish your credentials as a Republican. Now, I don't know if you heard. I hope you heard at least some of my rant for the first part of the hour, where I was talking about the concerns about the voting systems, when I was talking about the exit polls that were 50-50 one minute and ignored the next.
That particularly bothers me.
Okay. Tell me what I have wrong. Tell me what I'm not getting. You're a Republican. You're a supporter of Scott Walker's in this case. Do you have confidence in the results as they've been announced by the various counties in Wisconsin?
I have the same problem I have with most elections in most places in the country. There's no evidence to support that they were correct, and no evidence to support that they were incorrect at this point. It's what I call the vox machina, the voice of the machine, and I just have to accept it.
And you just have to accept it. Well, you don't accept it.
I can't double check it. No,
right.
I don't. But
go ahead.
And I think the pollster was that I overheard talking about these shy Walker supporters. You can take calls from Madison and Milwaukee. There were no shy Walker supporters voting on Tuesday.
To translate hang on, let me translate that, John. That means the shy they were too shy to talk to the exit pollsters. And that's a term that came out, by the way, of the 2004 election, where we saw the same thing, where the exit polls said John Kerry was going to win, and then the results said something different. And when the exit pollsters were asked to explain it, they said, oh, well, they were shy George Bush supporters. They were too embarrassed to tell the exit pollsters they were supporting George Bush. You reject the theory of the shy Scott Walker theory, who supporters who did not want to tell the exit pollsters that they voted for Scott Walker?
Correct. This election was polarizing in the sense that both sides were enthusiastically voting for their candidate. Well, maybe me less. Maybe that sliver like me less. But they were nonetheless not reticent to talk to an exit pollster. I don't believe that for a second. And so this is just post hoc myth-making as to what happened, because there's no data, there's no evidence. That you're just making it up,
now,
making a good narrative without support.
Okay, and how many of the paper ballots that were reported as results last Tuesday night, John Washburn, how many of those paper ballots that were counted by computer tabulators across the state are then verified by human beings to make sure that the computer tallied them accurately in those results?
None. Not unless one of these polling outfits decide to actually do some science and pick a ward where they were way off in their exit data, and then go do an open records request for the ballots and see which one of the two hypotheses is correct.
And
I've sort of that?
Yeah.
No, none of them have been checked. Double checked the machines.
None of them have been checked. We are simply going with whatever the machines tell us. Machines that, as I mentioned in the first part of the hour, are constantly wrong all over the country. You know, thousands of ballots thrown out. The ESNS, what is it? The DS-200.
DS-200s.
In New York, yep.
M-100s here in Wisconsin. You know, put a straight party ticket. Well, sorry, no votes on that ballot. But we'll suck it in the front and not let you redo it. Just all kinds of failure modes.
Now, what have you been met with, John Washburn, when you tried to look into these machines, when you tried to look into how they work, error reports, tried to get a look at ballots to make sure that they were counted accurately? Have you had much luck out there in the Badger State?
Certainly not looking at ballots. That saga was back in 2006. I wanted to get the ballots from the 2004 election.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 22 months was just expiring that summer.
Right.
And I wanted to take them so that I could actually have ballots marked by voters with real pens in real ways, examine them, and see how fast the students at UW-Milwaukee, the College Democrats and the College Republicans, could hand count them.
Right.
So you could actually have numbers, you know.
Right. Do a
test. How long does it take to accurately hand count 7,000 ballots? No one knows because no one's actually tried.
So, oh, but they tell us we can't hand count them because that will take forever. That will take too long. We can't possibly hand count ballots. Now, in this election, John,
show me the study where they said it's going to take X amount of hours.
I know.
I'll believe that.
There is no data to support that claim. We hear it all the time. Well, you know, if we want to hand count it, it's going to be weeks before we can. In Wisconsin, in this last election, for crying out loud, across most of the state, there was only one race, or two races, I guess, the governor and lieutenant governor on the ballot, right?
Yep, there were two, governor and lieutenant governor, in every polling district called a ward here in Wisconsin.
Right.
And in four Senate districts, there were three.
There was three.
For a total, yeah, there was either 10 ballot lines, you know, four for governor, including the write-in line, three for lieutenant governor,
uh-huh.
Or maybe it would balloon up as high as 10 ballot lines.
And so all they had to do in a race like that, when you've got two people on the ballot, is you make two piles. Walker votes here, Barrett's vote here. Walker votes here, Barrett's vote here. You make two piles, and then you count the piles in front of the people, in front of the cameras, in front of all the parties. And then you know the results at the precinct before those ballots move anywhere, so you don't have jerks like me and jerks like John Washburn. Sorry, John, had a, you know, for dramatic effect. Coming on the radio, coming on the national radio, and questioning these elections. And this is exactly what's going to happen as we head into November. John, I gotta get to a break here. So hang on. You know, I want to see if you feel this situation is going to get any better by November, if you have any confidence in the results that are going to happen in Wisconsin, and this Democratic race, why aren't the Republicans yet calling for a recount? They usually do that immediately. What's going on out there in Wisconsin? The Democrat only, quote-unquote, won by 800 votes. John Washburn from Fair Elections Wisconsin is with me. Brad from Brad Blogs, stay with us. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike. Next hour, by the way, we are speaking with Michael Leite about this attack on unions like I've never seen before, and I want to know what the hell the unions are going to do about it. Are they going to survive? We'll see. I don't know. They are losing, I think, at least the PR war in a huge way. So we'll have some hopefully some tough questions for this union leader coming up in a little bit. Right now, I've got John Washburn, a Republican supporter of Scott Walker's, who, like me, is questioning the results of last Tuesday's race. We don't know if the results were right or if they were wrong. And that goes, and you know, for those of you who say, oh, you're just, Brad, you're a partisan. Well, here we've got a Republican supporter who's asking the same question, a supporter of Scott Walker's. And I'm also asking the same questions in regard to the Democrat, John Lehman, the challenger to the incumbent Republican Senator Van Wengard in the 21st Senate District. if John Lehman, if his win holds out, it will flip the control of the Senate to the Democrats. That's kind of big. I know that things are changing. They're redistricting. They're going to have a new election in November, and it may flip back to the Republicans. But I'm somewhat surprised in a race with, I think it's something like, I want to say 70,000 votes. I don't have the numbers in front of me. That Lehman is winning by less than 800 votes, and the Republicans are not calling for a recount. John Washburn, do you have any explanation for that?
No, and I'm surprised they're not asking for a recount because, I'll admit it's a 1% margin of victory, which means that the Van Wangard campaign would have to pay for the full cost of the recount. But it's only one Senate district, so the costs are manageable. And it's the Senate that's in the play. Why not go for it? I find it odd,
usually,
given how important it was to maintain the control of the Wisconsin State Senate, that while it's still possible to maintain it, you let it go.
Now, they have until
it's
the...
It's not like the Wisconsin Republican Party is calling me up and asking me what they should do.
Not anymore, although I should say you did sit in for Kathy Nicholas up there in Waukesha, Wisconsin. She actually asked you to go to a county executive meeting in her stead some years ago when she couldn't make it. So, you know, John Washburn is the real deal here.
I've had people from the Republican, from the Milwaukee Election Commission ask me questions and advice, so it's not, and I've given my advice freely to both sides, so it's not a partisan thing. It's that track. You know, you got to have a real track before you can worry about the horse race.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's looking at the horse race. We look at the track conditions, because that is as much responsible for who wins and loses these races.
And John, who bets on a horse race without looking at the track conditions?
John, nobody. I got 10 seconds here. Do you have confidence that the results of the elections in Wisconsin are going to be any more reliable in November?
No, they won't be. They won't be. I am absolutely confident that they will be no more reliable, which is not reliable at all.
John Washburn from FairElectionsWI.com. Thanks, John. Always great to talk to you, my friend.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on again.
You bet. Brad in from Molloy. Much more straight ahead. Obama abandoned Wisconsin and deserves no respect if he goes there to campaign for himself, says Orangutan in the Bradblog.com chat room. Welcome back. This is your Mike Molloy Show. Can't say I disagree with you, Orangutan. This is your Mike Molloy Show. I am Brad Friedman of Bradblog.com, in for Mike all week long, broadcasting from the left coast. Yes, it is I, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me. If not the wingnuts out there, but, you know, whatever. I'm fighting for their democracy, too. So we're going to go momentarily to Michael Leidy to talk about this assault going on unions. But Douglas from Sacramento calls in. Oh, the phone number, by the way, 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. If you want to talk, we're going to talk this hour about this fight against the unions, which is a very real fight. And I think the unions may be misunderestimating the American public opinion about them as much as that is thanks to right-wing propaganda. I think they're still up against it, and they may need to look again at the way they are taking this on. So if you have any thoughts on that, 877-520-1150. You can also tweet me on the Twitters at the Brad Blog. And once again, you can stop by the bradblog.com chat room And yes, Daniel Doyle on Twitter asks, will the show be available for download later on? This is big time stuff. Yes, I agree it is. That first hour about what happened in Wisconsin. I will have it up tonight at late night on bradblog.com. Okay, let me get real quickly to Doug in Douglas in Sacramento, and then we'll get to my guest this hour. Douglas, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. What's up, brother?
Lovely to talk to you again. I'm not surprised, really, that nobody wants to press for a recount.
Why?
There are several possible answers. One is whether or not he actually won.
Mm-hmm.
There is whether or not the recount agrees with the machines.
Mm-hmm.
There is whether or not the recount agrees with the exit polls.
Mm-hmm.
And
turn down your radio there, Douglas. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
It's in the next room. I thought it was
okay.
I thought it was weak enough. Anyway,
that's okay.
Point is, most of those questions, there are heavy people who don't want us to know the answers to them.
Well, you would think that the Republicans would want at least to know whether they lost control of the Senate or not, but maybe some of those questions are questions that they don't want answered that might be answered with a recount. Of course, in Wisconsin, you get a recount by machine unless you go to a court and beg them to let you hand count. But, yep, that's a concern, and it's very strange. It's all very strange. And the bottom line is we just don't know because of the stupid, idiotic way that we run our electoral system, our now privatized and now fully secret electoral system in this country. Douglas, I got to run because I got a guest waiting, but I want to thank you for the call, my friend.
See you next time.
All right. So, yeah, I was on RT, the Russian TV, RT America last week, discussing these issues and my concerns, at least, about the results in Wisconsin. And an interesting thing happened. You can the clip. I got the clip at Brad Blog, but if you click on the clip, you then get taken to the YouTube page where they have all the comments from the YouTube commenters. And I was struck by the comments that were coming in regard to this segment. They weren't talking about what we were talking about. They were talking about the unions and how much commenter after commenter just hated the unions. And how the unions are responsible, these fat cat unions and their Cadillac healthcare plans, and they're taking all our public money. Here, I'll read you a couple of them, and then we're going to go to Michael Leidy. He's director of public policy for the California Nurses Association to find out what the hell the unions are going to do about this. Here's a couple of the comments. Wisconsin kicked big unions' ass. Congrats to the taxpayers of Wisconsin. You won. Listen up, America. The time is now to cut the throat of public sector unions. Another commenter said, voters in disbelief over Walker victory? LMAO, laughing my ass off. Wow, what a joke that is. The majority of Wisconsinites doesn't want their state to be run by a bunch of union labor bosses bringing their state into the hole. A misspelled hole there. A lot of misspellings in these comments for some reason. Someone else. This is spin. Americans are sick of greedy unions and out-of-control government. Freedom and prosperity don't come from extorting the public. Now, obviously, these people don't know what the hell they're talking about. They have been misinformed and disinformed over the years, but there are many of them. And no matter who actually won in Wisconsin, the pushback that we're seeing now against the unions, I think, is remarkable. I don't remember seeing anything like this, at least in my lifetime. And even out here in California, as Josh Marshall over at Talking Points Memo pointed out, there was a couple of ballot measures regarding public pensions for union public workers out here in California that also failed last Tuesday. So Marshall argues that some of the public sector union woes have to do with the fact that they have become politically isolated, that while private sector unions have been devastated by outsourcing, public sector employees, on the other hand, like those lazy policemen and those fat cat firemen who, you know, save us from burning buildings and collapsing towers, those horrible school teachers and nurses, those jobs can't be outsourced the same way that private jobs can. And that's led to resentment, he argues, Josh Marshall argues, among some in the public, particularly as public sector workers
are then paid by taxpayers. So I want to talk about this, and whether it's propaganda or not, it seems to me that the unions need to be able to answer to these charges and to this propaganda, and need a plan for how to move forward, or they may not be around much longer. Let me go to my guest here, Michael Leite. He is the director of public policy for the California Nurses Association. Michael, I know you are on hold for some of that. Do I have it wrong? Do you sense? Do you have a different sense than I do, or do or are you sensing the same sort of resentment that, well, I haven't seen around in 30 or 40 years, at least in this country? Am I misinterpreting it? Am I overinterpreting it? Help me out here, Michael.
Well, hi, Brad. I don't think so, really. I think you're spot on. I think the politics of resentment were in full bloom in Wisconsin, and unions at their peril don't take it seriously. If we in the labor movement believe that we can just blame the Wisconsin defeat on the overwhelming spending advantage that Walker's forces had, then we're missing the point, because what has happened is that ordinary folks have been devastated by the financial crisis. They've been devastated by 30 years of stagnant wage growth, as the top 1%, the top 10%, the top 0.1% have gotten vastly wealthier. Ordinary working people have seen their wages since 1980. I think the hourly wage has gone up about 80 cents. So that creates a situation where public sector workers who, as you say, are doing relatively better than their private sector counterparts in many respects, are going to either be the targets, or they're going to be part of a broader coalition to bring everybody up. And quite frankly, what happened in Wisconsin was, rather than do either of those things, that is, help bring everyone up, they became a target. And what we tried to do there is to say, first, let's identify the problem. The problem is not teachers. The problem, as you were citing, it's not firefighters. The problem is the economy doesn't work for the vast majority of people. The problem is not that we have to give concessions. We have to instead raise everybody's boats. And that message did not come through. The unions are in serious trouble. And arguably the worst thing about the Wisconsin result is the media spin that's been put on it. I mean, how many national media headlines and electronic have we seen where the headline is the end of big labor, the demise of unions? And that's the spin. And so you're absolutely right, both in terms and I think reality.
And do you feel that that spin is causing the reality, or are they accurately reporting that? In other words, you know, which comes first, I guess, the chicken or the egg? And frankly, does it matter? Because in the end, when these public union, you know, I saw Governor Mitch Daniels, who has tried to also end collective bargaining rights for public sector unions out there in Indiana. He was on Fox News Sunday. And he said to Chris Wallace that, well, people have decided that government works better without them, without the public sector unions. Well, of course, you know, everything works better with slave labor.
Right. Well, look, you know what Chris Wallace came to his credit? He came back at Daniels and said, hey, there's data that says that wages are lower, benefits are worse, people are paying more for their health care in the public sector. Mm-hmm. And Daniels basically says, oh, I don't recognize that.
Well, I think they think that's a good thing. Why should people make more than in the private sector? Now, the fact is, even that information has been propagandized, because overall, while public sector union workers may make more, if you compare, you know, counterpart to counterpart, and you can speak to this. We'll do this. I got to take a quick break here, Michael, but we'll come back with you. You can do this, because I know that the California Nurses Association, you guys represent both public sector and private sector nurses, right?
That's right.
And so we can compare, and I know that in many cases, if you compare, you know, job for job, that it kind of puts a lie to this fact that, you know, all these union members are doing much better than the non-union members. Anyway, we'll talk about that after we get back from the break here. The assault on the unions, what are unions going to do about it? Because whatever they're doing does not seem to be working. And, you know, yes, it's propaganda, but they've got to answer to the propaganda or they ain't going to be around much longer, it seems to me. If you want to get in, by the way, 877-520-1150 is our number, 877-520-1150. We'll be back with Michael Leidy. I am Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, in for Mike Malloy.
Soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all.
The recall was sparked by last year's massive protests over Walker eliminating collective bargaining for teachers' unions. Well, the results are in, and Walker crushed What's-His-Face by 7 points. Suck it, people who educate our children.
Yeah. That's just about right. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy here on the Mike Malloy Show. We are speaking with Michael Leidy of the Director of Public Policy for California Nurses Association about the assault on unions, the rather successful assault. And let me make it clear, I don't know who won or lost last week in Wisconsin, because the fact is, as I talked about in the first hour, nobody's bothered to check a single paper ballot to make sure the computer's got it right. So to me, whether Walker won or not doesn't matter. To me, what's clear is, you know, the real, I think, very real simmering resentment right now against unions, brought on by a terrific propaganda machine over the past several decades, but certainly on steroids now in the post Citizens United era. But it's very real, and the question is, what will the unions do about it? If you'd like to get in a thought here, 877-520-1150 is our number, 877-520-1150. Okay, Michael, we were talking before the break about the difference in pay for folks in the private sector versus the public sector. I think the California Nurses Association, you represent both the public and private union nurses, correct?
That's right. Yeah, and actually, Brad, we find that, ironically, in some cases, the public sector counterparts make less than the private sector. Sometimes, in fact, most cases, that's compensated for, and that's been the historic pattern in general, not just for nurses, with higher pension benefits. So that's one of the ironies of the current attack on public worker pensions, is that, as you were saying before the break, you compare profession to profession, in actual qualification to qualification, the public sector folks generally earn less in wages or salary and have better benefits. And that's historically been the trade-off. And pension benefits in the public sector for nurses were much better in the private than the private sector, who had, you know, 401ks, uh-huh, and only recently got the kind of pensions that the public sector had. And so our response has always been to try to raise the standard for everyone, mm-hmm, and to create equity where we can across private and public sector. Because frankly, from a nurse's point of view, the mm-hmm job's the same.
Exactly. And I mean, what I think one of the big points that people don't seem to understand here is that, yes, if a public sector worker's pay is lower, it's because they are paying into their pension as they go. And, you know, I'm amazed. I was with a family member a week or so ago who doesn't get the idea that these pensions, they're not gifts. They're not, you know, yeah, these golden parachute you get at the end. These are paid for out of the salary. These are paid for, you know, if you're working privately, you'd get more money. If you're working publicly, that money goes towards the pension at the end, when you retire. And when they're talking now about, oh, we need to cut out the pension, that's breaking a contract with these people who have worked for, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years towards retirement, counting on that pension. They want to just take that money away because they feel they don't deserve that money. That's some sort of a gift.
Right, and exactly. It's any economist will tell you, as every worker knows, if you get a wage and part of that is then given into a pension, mm-hmm, your take-home pay is less. You're making a choice, or you're bargaining a choice, either into wages or into salaries. And that's true for the private sector as well as the public sector. But in the public sector's case, that bargain has been more in favor of pensions, generally, than in the private sector. But both workers in both sectors are facing the same dilemma, and that is an inability to have a secure retirement.
Hang on to that dilemma. I got to take another quick break, then we'll have a big segment. Brad, in for Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
There used to be more of us in the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, but a lot of our jobs have disappeared. A lot of the clothes Americans are buying for women and kids are imports. They're being made in foreign places. When the work's done here, we can support our families and pay our taxes and buy the things other Americans make. That's what it means when the label says union.
Look for the union label when you are buying work clothes, dress, or girls. Remember somewhere.
What year was that, Tony? Does it say on that? 78? 1978, yes. Uh-huh. Go ahead, crank it. It's almost done there. We're able to make it in the USA. How quaint. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com talking about the assault on the unions and what the hell the unions are going to do about it. Maybe they need another PR push on their behalf, the way we saw in the 70s with that rather famous series of ads, Look for the Union Label. I'm joined by Michael Lighty of the Director of Public Policy for California Nurses, for the California Nurses Association. And our number, if you want to get in on this conversation, is 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. Love to hear your thoughts on this, because the question is, how do the unions now push back? Michael, before the break, we were talking about the dilemma, between paying now in the private sector, paying salaries now versus pensions that are paid later, that come out of workers' salaries, that Americans who are not union members do not seem to understand, even after what we saw in Wisconsin when Scott Walker came out and he said, oh, we've got a budget shortfall. Never mind whether there really was one or not, but we've got a budget shortfall. We have to close it somehow. And so we want to end collective bargaining. And the union said, no, we'll pay more out of our salary for pensions, for health benefits. That money comes out of their salary. I don't get why people don't understand that. And is this a matter of the unions not telling their own story effectively enough, as you heard them do actually rather effectively in that quaint commercial from 1978 just now?
Of course, as you say, Brad, a very famous commercial, but the problem is that commercial didn't stop the offshoring, so now that all the clothes are made in China, right?
Right.
So we have a problem in terms of we could do PR, and we need to do PR and better education, but ultimately it does come down to what built the unions in the first place, and that's organizing and uniting workers and the community. What we're trying to do in the California Nurses Association is we've initiated what we call a Main Street campaign, where we have argued that and promoted and organized for everyone having a secure retirement, everyone having a job with a living wage, with dignity, having guaranteed health care, and having a public education system that's of high quality. Those are the elements that lift everyone up, and the unions have to be engaged in the struggle to win those improvements. And that historically has been the role of unions. And if you look at some of the polling that's been done recently, It reflects the fact that unions are seen as an elite aristocratic group, if you will, within and among workers, and divorced from communities. I've had discussions with policymakers that say, "Oh yeah, I'm definitely with the community, but I'm not with unions." And that dichotomy is a killer for unions. And we have let ourselves be caught up in furthering that distinction to our severe detriment.
How do the unions further that distinction currently, and what could they do differently to not further that? I mean, because the unions, I think, couldn't have been more engaged than they were up in Wisconsin. And yet you see the backlash against them. I mean, somehow they need to tell the story of what they are doing better. How do we change that? And were the unions, as you saw them, and I don't know, were you up in Wisconsin at all for that fight up there, Michael?
I was, and we had a number of folks on the ground up there, too. And so it was... And my daughter goes to college there,
oh, okay.
So I'm familiar with it.
Yeah. How did they do up there, as you see it, in engaging the community and telling their story to the public?
Well, what the message they sent initially to the public was, we are one. And that only goes so far because, of course, the public in general is not just one segment. There are people who do much better, and there are people who do much worse economically, and there are also those with great power and those that don't have as much power. And so I think what unions didn't do was make a clear distinction between which side are you on. And they decided to offer concessions, mm-hmm. as you were saying, okay, I'm going to give back my salary. I'm going to pay more for my pension. And if you would please let me keep my rights for having done that. That doesn't work because it doesn't tell working people that unions are fighting even for their own members, let alone for the good of workers in general. And it creates a distinction between, okay, the unions are going to cut their deal mm-hmm. of whatever kind, even if it's a worse deal than they currently have, and they're going to be satisfied with that. And they're not going to actually be engaged in raising the standards for everyone. They're going to cut their deal, and that's the perception. They're going to cut the deal for themselves, and they're not going to fight for everyone else. Doesn't work.
And when you hear a message like, we are one, it's, well, to me, it's unclear what the hell it means.
Right.
But once I think I understand it, we are one is talking to the union. It's talking to other union members. It's reminding people in the union that we are one, we are working together. It doesn't speak to the public at large. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't say we are one with you. We are all one,
it doesn't speak to those.
It's an insular message.
Unions.
Yeah. Right.
Right. There are some folks who don't need a union, all right? Generally, they're in the 1% or so. But there are working people who actually would want a union. And even as recently as 2007, 60% of the people had a favorable view of unions. So clearly, the economic crisis has taken a toll here, and the union response to that crisis has not convinced ordinary workers that we're all on the same side.
How recently did you say it was?
2007. It was in the Washington Post today in a column mm-hmm. that tracked the polling level of approval for unions. And mm-hmm. as recently as 2007, it was 60%. Now it's below 50.
Interesting. Let me get to a phone call. Our numbers are 877-520-1150. Speaking with Michael Leidy of the California Nurses Association about how the unions are going to turn this around right now. Let me talk to, here we go, Tom in Rosemead, California. Hey, Tom, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Can you hear me?
I can, barely. You got a bad phone, so sing it out. Sing out your question for Michael Leidy.
Okay. I have a comment, and
okay.
That is the only step that we have is to take to the streets. I mean, that is the last, and it's the only way. I'm sorry to say it, but I'm sure that I'm positive. And the Occupy Wall Street, and we need to take to the streets. That's the only answer, period.
Well,
I mean,
Tom,
there is no,
Tom,
you can't say, we're going to go on strike and not work. They get scabs. They will get scabs.
Tom, hang on a second. Tom, they took to the streets in Wisconsin, didn't they?
Yes.
And did that work out favorably for the unions as you see it?
No.
Well, I think
let me get Michael's thoughts on this. Go ahead, Michael.
I think, Brad, that might be it is true that we took to the streets in the winter, particularly in February, very impressively. What was amazing about that is how little mainstream media coverage there was. I mean, if there were 20 Tea Partiers, you know, on a lawn someplace, there would be five TV cameras.
I've been down this road for years.
Hang on, Tom. Take him down for a second. Tom, I'll let you respond, but I just want to let Michael finish his thought.
So what I was going to say was that those street actions were very effective. They were not well covered, and I think that was part of the problem. But secondly, they quickly went to an electoral strategy, first to recall the Senate and then to recall Walker. So, and then it went from the recall of Walker to supporting a very inadequate candidate, Tom Barrett, who was promoting the same concessions that Walker had sought, except for the full reversal of collective bargaining rights. So the electoral strategy per se became the focus rather than building the mass movement and trying to make those connections between union and non-union. And in the face of that kind of electoral strategy, I think it was a failure. Not the street action and not the organizing, but the electoral approach was the failure.
Well, and we should say that the unions actually supported a different candidate, Falk.
Yeah, initially.
Okay. Initially. All right, Tom, your thought. Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Taking the streets was a failure. B, the correct political way was a failure. I'm sorry to say that. I mean, I was wonderful. I mean, I have tears in my eyes. It was a wonderful, valiant effort. C, the guys walking around with the mask doing the freaking anarchy thing, that's wrong, too. Okay? That's C.
Well, that was not the unions doing that.
No. But I'm just saying, I'm taking the whole broader view here because we're trying to find a solution, correct?
Okay.
Okay. So A, B, C, now D. Now what is D? Now we've already, the media, we do not have the money in. Okay? Right? D. We do not have the money in the media. Am I safe in saying that? Am I you know, going out of bounds?
Are you saying that, Tom? Are you saying that the unions are not supporting the media, their own media?
No,
no. I'm asking you. I know. Is that trying to understand what you're saying? Is that what you're saying, that the unions are not supporting
anybody? I'm just talking about facts. Facts are, we do not have. The fact is, we do not have the money in the media. Period. I mean, don't lie about that. That's true. You can't argue. Are you going
to
argue with me?
No. I'm trying to understand you, Tom. And I got to go. And I appreciate your thoughts here. I'm not disagreeing with you at all.
We do not have the money in the media. We do not control. We need to control the media.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. Michael, your thoughts on the media are the unions doing their job, getting their message out to, you know, via the media? I mean, you don't need the mainstream media anymore. The Tea Party goes out and creates their own damn media.
Well, that's partially true. I don't think unions are sophisticated enough in their use of media, but they certainly, in general, we in the labor movement are using all the tools of new media and as well as traditional media. And I don't think that's per se the problem. Again, I think it does go back to the need for more organizing, the more need for community outreach, the more need for building the grassroots base of the labor movement and its connection to other workers, non-union workers, obviously, in particular. And so that's really where the task is. And there's some very good elements within the labor movement. Working America does a very good job of going door to door and talking to non-union households about union issues, a very successful program which we've supported. I think that kind of model, I think the kind of thing that we're doing, we had 6,000 nurses and other workers and allies in Chicago at Daily Plaza demanding a tax on Wall Street to take some of that money back that they have stolen from Main Street. Mm-hmm. And we call it the Robin Hood tax movement. We're promoting Medicare for All, again, a program that's successful for seniors that could guarantee health care for all Americans. Those are the kinds of universal bridge-building approaches that we think work.
Well, I hear you, and I think they're good efforts. I just wonder if they are working. 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. You know, there's I'll get your response to this after the break. But, you know, the Republicans have been successful in putting out the message that, well, we have a crisis now, a budget crisis, and it's all the fault somehow of these union members. It's obviously a ginned up crisis, it seems to me, by folks like, you know, Grover Norquist, and somehow it's the union members' fault. But they're getting that message out. We'll talk about that. And what happened after 9/11? They love the firefighters and the police. Did America forget those are public sector union workers? Brad in from Mike Malloy. Stay with us, Michael.
Times are a-changing. Fortunately for us, bossman's rearranging. Doesn't care about your wife and kids, but only the gold that...
Welcome back to your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike tonight and all week long. Glad you could join us. Back to the phones in a moment, and Michael Leidy, my guest, but some breaking news here. The Los Angeles Kings have defeated the New Jersey Devils for the Stanley Cup playoffs, winning their first Stanley Cup in, we think, 45 years. Congratulations, LA. We're actually broadcasting out here from Los Angeles tonight. And I would care more, except LA beat my St. Louis Blues some time ago, so I hate them. On the other hand, the New Jersey Devils, eat it, Chris Christie. There you go. Okay, let's go back to my guest, Michael Leidy. We've got just a few more minutes. The phones are lighting up here. 877-520-1150 is our number. And if you're on hold, not speaking specifically with a direct union-related question, hang on the line. We're going to do all open phones in the next hour. So I'm going to get to everybody. Never fear, but I want to hit some of these union comments right off the bat. Let's go to Allison, because we only have a minute or two. So Allison in Minneapolis, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Allison, do you have a question or thought for Michael Leidy of the California Nurses Association?
Well, my you're talking about the perceptions of unions, and I've been in a union, and I have worked for corporate America, and being in a union is much better. But my perception of being in a union is they're never satisfied. The union job that I was at, if you worked there for 30 years, which I started when I was 18, I quit, but my fellow employees, 48, 49, 50, are retiring with these big pensions at 50 years old with full benefits. That's not reasonable.
Well, okay.
But on the other hand, I work in a corporate job. When I started this job in 1999, I made $13 an hour. They're paying $10 an hour for that same job. So they're never satisfied either.
Well, Allison, let me ask that to Michael offline, because your phone is not real good. So I appreciate the thought. Michael, you know, a call like that makes me think that... I mean, and this is really the Republicans have tried to make people think this. Well, you know, the unions are not satisfied. They want more. They do better than the private sector, which is not actually true. But they want to lower the standards to what folks in the private sector are getting, rather than saying folks in the private sector ought to be doing as well as the folks in the unions.
Well, of course, the private sector workers who are in a union do better than the workers who are not in the private sector in a union. So it is true that union workers do have higher wages and better pensions on average, and that's because they work collectively to bargain with their employer. Honestly, do individuals really believe that they have sufficient power to take on these big companies or even a relatively small business, say, of 50 or 100 people, rather than joining together collectively and trying to do a better deal for everybody? I mean, there is this notion somehow that workers don't deserve it. And you can couch that in saying, well, union workers don't deserve it. But the bottom line is there's plenty of money in this country. It's just concentrated at the top. If the average 1% takes home, the average income per family of the top 1% is over $1 million, and the bottom 90% is $29,000 or about $30,000. That was a 2007 figure. Mm-hmm. That's not fair. And it's not because what those folks do who earn $1 million is more valuable to society. Has more to do with their access to resources, oftentimes inherited wealth, and we are becoming a less mobile society where you simply can't make it on your own, and frankly, the wealthy don't care. And only by organizing collectively are we going to be able to address that imbalance.
And yet we loved the firefighters and the police and the nurses
and the teachers
after 9/11. 9/11. Well, we love, they were Americans' heroes, and now, well, the hell with them.
That's right.
I mean, this is a remarkable change in just 10 years. Let me see if I can do this really quick. Mark, I got to do this in about 10 seconds. A real quick thought from Michael Leidy, because I got to get out. I'm sorry.
I've been in the union for 37 years. I've been a union man all my life. It doesn't matter what union. I'll support any union. But the main thing is the Republicans have made it a target to go after unions and divert the fact that they're going to try to just transfer all the wealth to the top. And if you look at the fact that that's the infrastructure of the Democratic Party, after Citizens United, they're a target, a big target. And we have to understand the Republicans are using the divide and conquer. And we really just need to get everybody up to a union democracy-type workplace.
Let's all get them up to a higher level rather than sink to the lower level. Michael Leidy, final thoughts? I got about 10 seconds for you here.
Well, I agree. I think that's exactly right. We either lift everyone up together or we're going to sink individually. And so I really appreciate you having me on, Brad, and I really like the music as well.
Thank you, sir. I'll pass that on to Tony. Thank you. Michael Leidy from the California Nurses Association. Thanks for all you do. The conversation will continue. Your calls right after this. Welcome back, Truth Seekers. You've come to the right place. This is your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, what am I? Investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, broadcasting from beautiful Los Angeles tonight, home of the Stanley Cup champions, the Los Angeles Kings, who just defeated the New Jersey Devils minutes ago, 6-1. Sorry, Chris Christie. Suck it. What else do I... Oh, go to bradblog.com. We got our chat room going on there. Margot Paez, our super-duper associate producer, is doing double and triple time tonight in there. I'll tell you why in a moment. You can also give us a call at 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150 is our phone number. And you can tweet me on the Twitters at... The Brad Blog. I'd love to hear from you there, or just follow me and hang on for the ride. Before we get to your calls, I know there's a bunch of you hanging on to talk about both the last hour and the hour before that concerning the elections in Wisconsin. There's just one item that I want to make sure we... Hey, Des.
Hey.
You don't even know why I asked you.
No, I have no idea.
Yeah, that's good. Des is, as a matter of fact, the reason we're making Margo work extra hard this week is because you're going to be gone this Wednesday.
Yes, yes.
What are
on
you doing Wednesday,
Wednesday? I'm going to be a panelist on the Young Turks show, The Point.
Really?
Yeah, we'll be taping during the Mike Malloy show. So you can still listen to the Mike Malloy show and then tune in later.
Because it's
on.
Not live.
It's not live
on The Point.
It's on tape.
Right. So
right.
Have you done that before?
I have not. It'll be interesting. They're great people over there at the Young Turks. Just awesome.
Are you going to screw
it? Aces.
You're not going to screw it up, are you?
I hope not.
Are you nervous?
I'll do my best.
You scared?
We'll see.
Okay. Don't embarrass me, Desi.
Oh, I'll do my best.
Okay. Here's the that's not actually the reason why I wanted to call
really?
You.
Okay,
no,
good.
That wasn't it.
It's all right.
You're blushing, though.
Am
anyway,
I?
Virginia lawmakers says sea level rise is a left-wing term. I just wanted to get this because
it's a code word, apparently.
Yes. They excise it from the state report on coastal flooding. This is from Climate Progress. Virginia's legislature commissioned a $50,000 study to determine the impacts of climate change on the state's shores. To greenlight the project, they omitted words like, quote, climate change and, quote, sea level rise from the study's description itself. According to the House of Delegates sponsor of the study, those are, quote, liberal code words, even though they are non-controversial in the climate science community.
Well, so, I'm pretty much non-controversial, I would think, the world over.
A sea level rise is not a lefty commie pinko phrase?
No, actually, it's a scientific term about the rising of the sea level.
They
see how that works?
The study uses terms like coastal resiliency and recurrent flooding.
I know. And see, what's so funny about that is that climate scientists right now, the current predictions are that at our current rate of putting out CO2 into the atmosphere, at the current rate of ice melt around the world, mm-hmm. that sea levels could rise as much as 3 feet by the end of this century, which will endanger billions of dollars of infrastructure along all of the U.S. coasts, including that of Virginia, whether or not the GOP Republicans, the Republicans in Virginia actually acknowledge it or not.
So what you mean, though, is not that the sea level rise is going to cause damage. You mean this recurrent flooding.
Flooding would be that sea level rise that puts you permanently under 3 feet of water. Recurrent flooding sounds.
This is something that happens every now and again.
It goes out. The tide goes in.
Never a miscommunication. Yeah. Okay, and this comes along at the same time. So sea level rise is a left wing term. This comes just a week or two after we saw in North Carolina. What was it out there?
Oh, the state legislature, Republican majority state legislature in North Carolina, their state senate, has decided to vote on completely removing any idea of the science of sea level rise from their reports on planning for sea level rise.
They've made it illegal. Or they're trying to.
Well, they're trying to. They haven't actually passed it. It has not been signed by the governor or anything as far as the full legislature. But what they want to do is they want to say you cannot use actual physics and current technological science for predicting sea level rise in the next 100 years or so. You can only use the data from the last since the beginning of the last century, the last 100 years, which it's only risen about 8 inches. So that means that it can only rise in a linear fashion, according to the Republican. That means that it'll only rise another 8 inches over the next 100 years instead of the 3 feet that's predicted, which is much nicer for those coastal
developers. So it's predicted. Scientists say it's going to rise 3 feet. They can't say that. They have to say, oh, it's only going to rise 8 inches.
They're not allowed to use or show the science that will indicate anything other than a linear rise in the sea level, which now is a much more palatable 8 inches.
So science is illegal. They're making science illegal.
They're trying their best.
And sea level rise,
which is kind of scary for anybody
term.
Who ends up buying land or developing coastal properties, because if they don't realize that they've been sort of tricked into thinking that there's only going to be 8 inches of sea level rise, then they're going to be sorely mistaken come 20, 30 years, 40 years when it gets a lot worse.
When the sea level rise comes in their living room and it's not just a recurrent flooding.
Right.
Okay. Well, I wanted to get your take on that because I know that you are the expert in liberal code words.
Apparently.
So, well done. Thank you. That's, by the way, Desi Doyen. Who are you again? You're the producer of this show and my
managing editor and co-host with you for the Green News Report.
Yeah, with you. You notice how she puts managing editor first before the co-host part? She's the managing editor of the Green News Report, heard on fine progressive radio stations near you. And if it's not on your fine progressive radio station, I would complain. You can listen to us on at greennews.bradblog.com. You can download us via the iTunes, listen to us on the Stitchers. Oh, and follow Dez on the Twitters at Green News Report. We will have tomorrow's report tomorrow. And until then, let's go to your calls. 877-520. Well, because we have an actual 6 minutes of Green News, politics, analysis, and snarky comment. That's my job, the snarky comment part. 877-520-1150. Yeah, I know the phones are full. Let's go to them. Pam, Wisconsin people first. We love you, Wisconsin. Pam in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
Well, I was wondering if you had an opinion on who would be more likely to use the paper ballots, the Republicans or Democrats?
What do you mean who would be more likely to use them as voters?
Yeah.
You mean if given a choice?
Yeah.
Well, Republicans have been conned into believing that paper ballots are, you know, they're error prone. You're better off using a 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting system. So I suspect that, you know, many Republicans would want to use a touchscreen. That said, you know, we're going to have on, I'm hoping tomorrow night, Doug Weed, who's actually a senior advisor to Ron Paul. Okay, the Ron Paul people have got this figured out.
Well, I have a point. I worked for the election.
Go ahead.
In my little community in southwest Wisconsin,
yeah,
we only had 898 people vote in our little community.
Right.
And on the paper ballots, Walker had 52 votes and Barrett had 71, so there were a total of 123 paper ballots.
Uh-huh.
But combined with the machine, by the way, you know, Barrett was ahead by 19. But add the machine totals to it, and Walker came out ahead by 4.
Now you say add the machine. So you're in your municipality there, they're allowed to vote on either a hand-marked paper ballot or on the touchscreen machines. It's up to them?
That is correct. A new development, yes.
And you're so Barrett wins on the paper ballots, and, well,
by a lot. By 19 votes, you know, out of 123, Barrett was ahead 19.
Uh-huh.
Then you add the machine to it, and Barrett is behind by 4. 898 people voting.
And see, 898 people voting?
Yeah, there's 1,000 people voting in our little...
But wait, very few people use paper at all. Walker had 52, Barrett had 71,
yeah,
and then you had hundreds using the touchscreen, right?
Right, yeah. And we had just gotten voting machines. We had started to get voting machine, I think it was during Obama's election. That's the first election I worked.
Yeah.
They had one voting machine. And I wasn't familiar with the voting process, but I had followed you for a little bit, and I wasn't very happy about things the way they've been going since, you know, Gore and Bush, you know, and then the Supreme Court seemed to decide the election.
No, they didn't seem to decide it, Pam. They did decide it. Yes, they did decide it. That's right.
And then I think Gore let it go because he said it would tear the country apart, and this has really torn apart the state, I think. But I expected a close election.
Mm-hmm.
I expected a recount like what Al Franken had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, didn't he have the old Wellstone seat?
Right.
And then after Gore and Bush and then Feingold got kicked out and now Kucinich is out.
Well, the thing is that they, in your community in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, where you use those touchscreen machines,
I'm sitting in Eau Claire, but this is not the community that I work in.
Well, wherever your community was, where they have those touchscreen machines, they cannot be recounted. There can be no recount. You can push the button. I mean, and that's why hundreds of those votes, and it's been a very interesting, and John Washburn, the guest who I had on earlier, wrote a really interesting article on this and about the fact that this company, Command Central, had come into the state and offered free touchscreen voting machines to like 44 different municipalities in exchange for their optical scan system, the paper ballot system. They said, we'll give you this touchscreen machine for free. And by the way, they're not certified, according to John Washburn, for use in Wisconsin, but they're using them anyway, apparently, that we'll give you this for free if you just give us two of your paper ballot op-scan machines. And so, you know, I don't really know what to make of that. But the fact is, when we don't count the ballots, who knows?
Well, what happened was, you know, we had to hand count our ballots, and people were tired of doing that. So machines seemed like a great thing. But so we had one machine. I think it was somewhere around $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then this guy came in and talked to, you know, some older people there that are tired of staying up late. Well, younger people can count. But anyway, they sold refurbished machines to the city for about $2,000 or $3,000 each. One this year, and they'll throw in another one. They can pay for it next year.
Yeah.
So this little community, you said it was less than 900 people voting, have three machines, and we went down from 5 voting booths to 1. And people were not even offered
paper ballots.
You had to demand it. Otherwise, you were, you know, a lot of peer pressure. Go on over there.
And Pam, this is why, you know, and I realize I drive people crazy with this because I talk about this almost every time I'm on the Malloy Show, and not just, you know, before and after elections.
You understand, I follow you. I know. I was there at the training saying, okay, how about these things, these machines? When are they audited? You know, we have a lot of integrity when we sit there, you know, and our people that I know, my neighbors, we sit and count, and everybody's trying to be really accurate, and we keep track of how many people are voting and, you know, go across and
yep.
make sure that the totals are the same. But what happens here with the voting machine? How do we know that that is really adding things up correctly? There's
Pam,
no auditing.
You can't
even spot or I was.
You can't,
that.
Pam. I gotta get to a break here. I'm sorry because I know I hear you. Those are 100% unverifiable machines. Anybody who votes on a touchscreen machine. Who doesn't do it because they're forced to do it is absolutely out of their mind, or they do not give a damn whether their vote is ever counted accurately at all. Pam, I got to get to a break. I'm sorry.
Sure.
I love to hear from you. Really appreciate sure. the call. 877-520-1150. If you're hanging on the line, keep hanging in there. We're going to try to get to everyone. Boy. Brad in for Mike Malloy. Stay with us. On me, Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker from the Brad Blog, here with you for our final hour tonight. We're in all week for Mike Malloy. 877-520-1150 is our phone number. 877-520-1150. By the way, I'll get a quick call in here before the break. But while I was talking to Pam there in Wisconsin, I started to mention Doug Weed. Senior advisor to Ron Paul. We hope he will be joining us tomorrow night. Speaking of people who have figured out how to stand up for themselves, what has been going on across the country at county and state conventions is remarkable. And it's being captured on video, but it's not being run on the news. These Ron Paul folks are standing up for themselves, standing up for their democracy. And what goes on in Tampa this summer at the Republican National Convention may not be as dull and boring as everyone is leading you to believe right now. We're going to talk about that tomorrow night with Doug Weed. Anyway, let me get to Chris in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Chris.
Hi, Brad. I just wanted to call you and tell you I don't believe these election results at all. There's so many red flags going off here.
Yep.
And I had heard you talking to the man from the Nurses Union
yep.
and asking what we should do here in Wisconsin. Well,
mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of people are getting led down the path that we didn't get the vote out and this is our fault. And, you know, it was lack of the unions getting the word out. I think it was lack of the vote being counted. I really do. We had people waiting in line
mm-hmm.
when Barrett conceded. I
yep.
don't understand that at all. I'd really love an answer for that.
Yep.
I really think that what we have to do is we have to get some grassroots efforts reaching out even further. And I think the way we need to do this isn't just about unions. This is about working people in general, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to go and find people around the state because there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be hurting. And if we can maybe get some groups going and we can network, we can help these people, and then we need to educate them. We need to educate people so that they understand that our votes are not counting. And then we've got to get a big movement to go and insist that our votes are counted, because I really think that that'll solve a lot of our problems here.
Yep.
I mean, my hair stands on end. The more I learn about our elections, I just cannot.
Chris,
believe.
Hang on. Let me come back to you on the other side of the hour.
Okay.
You're listening to Brad on the Mike Malloy Show. Stay with us.
Well, I've been down so goddamn long that it looks like up to me. Well, I've been down so very damn long.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, you are down so long.
Like,
you know what? I think it's the computer. Let's blame the LA Kings for that. It's the LA Kings who are the Stanley Cup champions tonight. It's slowing down all our internets and computers here at K-Talk AM 1150 in Los Angeles, where I, Brad Friedman, am broadcasting in for Mike Malloy. Welcome back to the show, 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150, and taking your calls for the rest of the hour, as long as you still want to talk. But Chris, I didn't mean to cut you off there, because you were on a roll, you were on a rant. I hate to cut people off like that. So you were saying you just do not trust the results in Wisconsin because they don't count them.
No, it's because they don't count them, and there's so many other things. I mean, the instance we've had with Kathy Nicholas, she's still allowed to do her role. Yeah. I don't understand this. We had open ballot bags. There's no teeth in our laws. We can't do anything about these people.
Well, you can do something about it, but it's going to be a county by county fight. You're going to have to. I mean, it's not going to be an easy fight. But you're right. You had mentioned before the break the fact that they had called, not only did they call the race, but Tom Barrett actually conceded while people were still in line voting in parts of, I understand, the city of Milwaukee and in Racine County. Now, remember, Chris, how furious the Republicans were back in 2000 when the networks called the race at the time for Al Gore before people were done voting in the western part of Florida. They were furious that the networks were throwing the race for Al Gore. Now you had people who were still voting in across the state of Wisconsin, and the Republicans didn't give a damn that all the networks called it. They were out there celebrating. Couldn't have been happier.
Right. And I don't understand why people aren't raising hell, because I have people around. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to curse. I have people around here that are saying, oh, we did it. We didn't get out the vote. I'm so tired of hearing that. Yeah. I heard that in the recalls in the summer. I understand we won 2 more of those than we got. I'm involved with the Election Defense Alliance.
Oh, good.
I've been learning a lot about elections.
Good.
And I've got a lot more to learn, but we really need to do something about the laws. And I think that the problem is education. And I really think something else that happened with the unions, the reason that they have such a bad name, it's not just because they got rid of all the private sector jobs, and then the unions in the public sector are making more. There was a class that went around called Prosperity 101. Herman Cain was one of the people that created that. And I think what happened was, I think that this was taught in a lot of companies, from what I understand from the website I saw.
Uh-huh.
That is what happened. So I think that, you know, this is something that happened over a long period of time. You know, I know that sounds real conspiracy, but we all know that ALEC exists now. So I think we have a really good idea that That's exactly what they're
they're in for the long haul. ALEC, now we know that ALEC exists within the last year, but the co-founder of ALEC, actually the founder of ALEC, Paul Weyrich, was announcing the strategy, 32 years ago now in 1980? Paul Weyrich, you got that queued up? He already told everyone 30 years ago what the plan was, how to win elections. Here's
how many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Our leverage in the election goes up as the voting populace goes down. That was Paul Weyrich in 1980, a conservative demigod who just died last year, was celebrated. It's not like this is an obscure guy. These folks on the right love this guy. He was their hero. He created ALEC. ALEC was the one pushing these photo ID restriction bills all across the country. This is what is going to affect the election in November. So I yell and scream about it. Chris, you hear me out there.
Yes,
hopefully, readers of Brad Blog hear me, listeners to the Mike Malloy Show hear me. But, and I catch a lot of hell. Oh, don't you ever talk about anything else? Well, yeah, I do. But this is the core of everything that happens in this country. And if you can't change the system, if you can't change it via elections, well, what do you have left? And I don't even want to, for the moment, think of what we have left. I think the system needs to change. The government needs to change. And that starts at the ballot box. And that starts with citizens like you, Chris, overseeing your own damn elections and making sure that the guy who was announced the winner is actually the winner.
You got it.
That's all it. That's all it takes.
And we got to make sure everybody doesn't get all distracted with we didn't have a good enough go out get out the vote effort, because that's not true.
Yeah, BS, BS. Count the ballots.
People.
If you could prove to me that Walker won, and by the way, I have to say this: if you can prove to me that that Democrat won in the Senate 21st Senate District, all you got to do is prove it to me. If you can prove that he won,
count it.
Yeah, count it.
I don't think they'll count it.
Come on, Republicans! Here's your chance. You only lost by 787 votes. Where's the recount in State Senate District 21? Count it in front of the people. Let's see what the results really were. Then we can know, did Scott Walker win? Fine. Why did he win? And then you can work from there. But until then, it's all guessing games, and it's madness, Chris.
Yeah.
But you knew that. Thanks, Chris. You rock.
Okay. Thank you.
Keep up the fight. Let's go to Arnold in North Carolina. We'll move out of... Where is it here? Here we go. Hey, Arnold, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
How you doing, Brad? I heard you earlier on Mark Thompson. I said, let me stay awake so I can hear this man. And I am enjoying your show tonight, okay?
You rock, Arnold. Thank you, brother.
I really am, man. What are you talking about when you say the L.A. Kings did what to what?
The L.A. Kings, the hockey team out here, beat the New Jersey Devils to win the Stanley Cup.
Oh, that's what you say about Chris Christie, huh?
Yeah.
Let's take it easy with the man. The man don't have an obese problem, a obesity problem. He has a dyslexia problem. He's a dyslexic anorexic. Now, let me get on what I was thinking about earlier.
Yeah.
About the election thing.
Yes, sir.
You know, and I was telling you your phone screen, the very charming young lady who I talked to earlier, that I think it's a crime and a shame that we have fell into this kind of situation in our country. How this wave of fascism is just washing over all of our freedoms and everything.
Yep.
Now, the thing that really I think I find it shameful is that we got soldiers coming back from Iraq and
Afghanistan.
Iran.
Yeah.
Afghanistan, excuse me.
Yeah, not yet Iran, but we'll play this call next year. Yeah, Afghanistan.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they come back with all kinds of serious wounds, injuries, mind. I mean, they have really bad brain injuries and stuff like that. And they come back to, first of all, to find a jobless nation here. Mm-hmm. And they come back to find that, you know, they're over there fighting for freedom, liberty, as the Republicans love to shout, freedom, liberty, we got to win this fight, all this kind of crap. We got to make sure Saddam Hussein don't have weapons of mass destruction and all that kind of crap. And they come back and they got to vote on machines that won't even count their vote.
Yeah, because they
this is ridiculous. This is sinful. That we have soldiers coming back that they find themselves in this situation. And I'm telling you, it's a very dangerous situation because they find them in. The suicide rate among these young people is way up there.
Yeah,
it just takes a little bit to make them snap, you know?
I was just about to say that the news report out this week from Associated Press, the suicide rate in the military is now at the highest level that it has been in 10 years. And I've been talking about over these past 10 years about the suicide rates among the troops who are being, you know, stretched out insanely in, you know, endless wars. And now it's worse than it has been in the last 10 years. Yeah, Arnold, it is obscene. We are, you know, the reason that these Republicans, and I'm sorry, I hate to say it, and Ron Paul, folks, I you know, I love you. But the party that you're playing with there hates democracy, and you're seeing that now firsthand. They hate democracy. They will tell you they are spreading democracy around the world. That's why we have to go to Iraq.
Right.
BS. That ain't what they're doing. Absolutely, Arnold.
Right.
Yeah.
Can I say one thing about the unions? That's real quick.
Quickly.
You know, the unions unraveled when they called themselves Reagan Democrats. When they back there in those days fell for that crap Reagan was feeding them.
Yep.
You're going to let some black guy, some unqualified black guy through affirmative action come and take your very secure job you have as a union person back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
You had a very secure job, a very high-paying job. Now look at your union people.
Yeah.
You used to be 35% of the workforce. Now you're hardly 7% of the workforce anymore.
Arnold.
I'll tell you, you got to be ashamed of yourselves.
Arnold, thank you for paying attention. You rock, man. You're right on the money. And man, I'm glad you found us on the Mark Thompson Show, Make It Plain Show on Sirius XM Channel 127. And appreciate that fact that you stayed with us. We're here all week, Arnold. Please stay with us all week. It only gets
all
better.
All right, my man.
Thank you, brother.
I will do.
All right. Take care, Arnold. Very good. Do we get to a break? 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. Do I have to? Yeah, let me go. You tell me. Okay. No, see? Well, too late. All right, we'll wait for a second. Let me get to a call. Books, if this is written right, books in Reno, Nevada. Noticed I said Nevada. I said it properly, Books. But is that really your name, Books?
Righto, okay. Brad. Right. What ho. And here's another reason why there won't be a recount in Wisconsin. I was listening to the BBC World Service early Wednesday morning, and their correspondent in reporting the results said that this coming November, a state Senate seat in northern Wisconsin,
right,
will be up for election,
right,
and that seat is held by a Democrat who is retiring,
right,
and that is in a red district, and the Republicans expect to win it back, making Tuesday's Democratic win a moot point.
Well, that's right. They've redistricted in Wisconsin, and it's heavily weighted now towards the Republicans. So yeah, they think they're going to get it back in a few months. So who cares, right?
So good show, and good night.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate the call. Whether that's the case or not, whether they're going to win it back in a year when Obama is on the ticket remains to be seen. But I think it's rather unlike Republicans to give up any ground anywhere ever. And the fact that they're not calling yet, they may still do it, and I hope they do. Hey, Republicans, 787 votes, I think, separating the two in Wisconsin for control of the state Senate, and you're not calling for a recount? You're not claiming Democrats were committing fraud? Why is that? 877-520-1150. A few more minutes left tonight of your Mike Malloy Show. Brad, in for Mike. Stay with us. Indeed. Seems like old times indeed. We are back all this week for Mike Malloy. And if you're on the phone, hang on. I'll try to get right to you. I think we'll have a few more calls left here. My thanks, of course, tonight to engineer Tony Sorrentino, who doesn't suck here at LA's K-Talk AM 1150. A little bit. Yeah, I know. But I wasn't going to point that out. You did. Way to go. Good to see you, Tony. Seems like old times. Also, my thanks to producer Desi Doyen, super-duper associate producer Margo Paez, who was pulling double duty, at least double duty here tonight. who else do I have to thank here? In the chat room, I don't even know who's in the chat room because I was in and out. And was 4Earthy there? I didn't see 4Earth. I hope she's okay. And Jeannie Dean, I think I saw Jeannie Dean come by. Thanks to you guys for all you do over there in the chat room to make things fun. Oh, if you didn't catch the chat room, you can go by and check the replay tonight at bradblog.com. You can read the chat room while you listen to the archives, which I'll post on bradblog.com late tonight. There you go. And to thank me, you can go to Mike Malloy and buy a podcast subscription so you can do that all the time and support Progressive Radio in the bargain. My thanks tonight also to my guests, John Washburn and Michael Lighty, and of course to Mike and Kathy Malloy for entrusting me not to break anything while they're gone. Let me get to a couple of quick callers. We've got just a minute or two left. Bob, where are we here? Bob, back in Minneapolis. Hey, Bob, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Thank you very much. Let me just quickly say, if I were king concerning the election situation, and believe me, democracy is in danger of being hijacked because of the situation we see now.
Yeah.
I would say in every place where a vote is counted that there should be a paper ballot backup, because Reagan, the conservative icon, said trust but verify.
Well, we don't need, Bob, we don't need a paper ballot backup. We need a paper ballot front up. We need a paper ballot to be the thing that we count, you know, before we determine who won or lost. We need to count the goddamn paper ballots.
Well, here in Minnesota, we have paper ballot is marked and then put into a scanner.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the paper ballot as a backup in case we don't trust the scanner to give the proper result.
Yeah, well, Bob, you shouldn't trust the scanner.
That's why Al Franken could, in a very close election, beat Norm Coleman here for senator in 2008.
Bob, if you didn't hear the first hour of this show, I'll have it posted at bradblog.com tonight. You need to listen to the first hour. It's not a matter of whether it's a close. Did you hear the first hour?
I did.
Yeah, never mind whether it's close or not. Anything can happen with these machines with the stroke of a few keystrokes. And, you know, we don't wait until and if, maybe, who knows, there'll be a close election. And then in Minnesota, you even got to go to court to get a permission to hand count, because otherwise they just want to recount with the same machines. We need to count. We need to get it right. We need to get it right on election night in front of the people, in front of the parties, in front of the video cameras, in front of the public. So we don't have these questions, so I can talk about something else. Now, Bob,
may I say if I may?
You may.
During the civil rights struggle in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
Things started turning around when the federal government started enforcing things.
Mm-hmm.
And to my mind, the federal government needs to enforce the voting situation so that democracy does not get hijacked. And that means that if there are places where votes are in danger of being hijacked, then the federal government needs to establish same-day voting.
Same-day registration? Bob, I got to get to I got to get out here, actually. So
Same-day registration. That's the way to handle it.
I agree, and the federal government needs to, the DOJ needs to start doing its job and enforcing the Voting Rights Act in all 50 states. Thanks, Bob, and by the way, thanks for being an election judge. I really appreciate you doing that. Very quickly, Linear Bob notes in chat in the bradblog.com chat room that the GOP uses paper ballots in their primaries. They also do not require photo IDs. And on that note, and I'm not going to have enough time for this caller, so Mark, I'll invite you to call back on another night. But very quickly, in South Florida, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Go, Mark.
Okay, real quick. I can think I got a solution to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Everything's computerized right now, and you do have the paper ballot, and then you have your button pushing machine when you go in. Why not actually use the voter ID? Okay, now what that does is it gives you the opportunity to be an individual, to look up possibly online to a website where you can say, hey, I did vote, did they calculate my vote, and did they distribute my vote accordingly to the party in which I was in favor of?
Okokay, Mark, let me respond, because I only have 10 seconds before I get out. Mark, you don't want to be able to do that, because then you can buy or sell your vote. You don't want to let other people know how you voted after an election. That's one. Photo ID, if they don't have one, I guess they should just go to hell. They don't get to vote if they don't have a photo ID, right? No, you don't. Mark, call back another night. I'll talk to you in more detail. I'm not trying to cut you off, but no, you don't. I buy beer all the time. I have no problem with photo ID. Don't worry about it. Anyway, we'll see you guys tomorrow night. Keep it lit. I'm Brad Friedman. See you at bradblog.com.
Hey, guys. I want to give you an opportunity that you've never had before.
My name is Ellen, and I'm an attorney talking to you about a medical breakthrough for men in the sexual health world that uses cutting.